We look for change. And in this industry, in venture capital, you have to be looking for change. So we're watching change happen right now. I mean, it's kind of interesting. We're seeing a lot more automation and artificial intelligence make its way into the logistics industry.
Hi there, logistics fans, and welcome to Out of the Box, your go-to podcast about everything cool that's going on in the world of logistics. With a lot of smart people, we not only talk about supply chain strategies, but also the future of e-commerce, robotics, last mile, and more. So if you're ready, then sit back, grab a snack, and let's unbox the hottest trends in logistics with Pia, Margarita, and me, Lynn.
Hi there, and welcome back to Out of the Box. I'm Margarita, and today we will cover a super exciting topic, especially for those who are interested in startups and investments, so within warehousing and logistics, of course. We will talk about strategic investments and how established players can cooperate with startups for mutual benefit. And I'm super excited to have not one, but two guests who are perfectly suited to explore this topic with me. Here I have Tony Palchek and Justin Merle, who are both investors in Zebra Ventures, the corporate venture capital arm of Zebra Technologies. Welcome both.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Great. So maybe we can start a little bit with your backgrounds and getting to know you a little bit better. How did you end up at Zebra? And maybe, Tony, you would like to start?
Okay, yeah, thanks. I've been at Zebra for 9 years now, and I actually arrived at Zebra through an acquisition they made of Motorola Solutions Enterprise Business. So at that time, Zebra was about a billion-dollar revenue company focused on printers, and they acquired a $2 billion business from Motorola Solutions that gave them the mobile computing and scanning capability. So all those things kind of tie together quite nicely, and that became bigger Zebra and what Zebra is today. And of course, we've grown on top of that. And at the time, I was at Motorola Ventures and making investments on behalf of Motorola. And it's kind of just lucky, I guess, that I got over to Zebra and that it was either my boss or I were going to be the one to go over with the acquisition. And I drew the right straw, I guess, and got over to Zebra. But it's been a great time since I've been here. We've made a lot of new investments. I came over with 11 portfolio companies, and Zebra had already invested in 6 companies at the time. So we actually started with about 17 companies. We've had several exits since then and made several new investments since then. But that's how I got over to Zebra Ventures.
That's a very cool story. And so there was an overlap of 6 out of 11 companies that both Motorola and Zebra were invested in?
Yeah. No. Well, so actually Zebra had invested in 6 companies prior to my arrival.
Ah, okay.
There were some interesting companies. A few of them are still left with us, but some of them have exited. And Motorola had been investing in this space a little bit more heavily. And so they had 11 companies that they felt were appropriate for the enterprise space. And I came over with those 11. So it started with 17 companies and it was just me. And thank God we were able to bring Justin on board about 3 years ago or so, because I really needed the help. I get help from a lot of different people in Zebra, but I really needed somebody that understood venture capital and due diligence and the financials, and was lucky to find Justin along the way. So Justin, if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit, maybe where your background and how you fit into Zebra.
Sure. Yeah. As Tony said, I've been with Zebra Ventures for about 3 years now. Prior to Zebra, I have a finance and accounting background. So prior to Zebra, I was at big four accounting and consulting firms, Deloitte and Ernst & Young. And most recently, Ernst & Young, I was in their strategy and transactions practice, where I primarily focused on performing due diligence around buy side and sell side M&A transactions. And so that kind of looking at a company's financials, understanding the competitive landscape, right, understanding their technology. So that those skills work directly for kind of looking at startups and performing due diligence on some of the companies that we look at in potential investments.
That's pretty cool. And what do you feel is the main difference between maybe corporate venture capital and what you used to do before? Is it kind of like the same skill set, or do you think you had to upskill something?
Yeah, no, great question. So the companies that I was looking at before were primarily private equity companies making acquisitions to, they're more mature companies, and so a lot more complicated financials, I guess I would say. So now I used to be just strictly focused on more finance and accounting. And so now these companies are more simple in terms of financial aspects, but more complex in terms of technology suite. You know, there's less information out there because they're startups. And I guess my scope has expanded beyond just financials more to product, technology, customers, how they fit in with the competitive landscape and the partnerships they have. Also, how are they strategic to Zebra, right? So it's, I guess the scope has become a lot more broad, and it's very exciting technology as well.
Yeah, and I had also like one maybe small question to Tony, since like you've been in the space for so long. How was it when you started, like when it comes to robotics automation in the logistics industry? And did you see some kind of path that you would like to share?
Yeah. Well, if I step back a little bit, I was at Motorola, and at one point Motorola was really big in cell phones and cellular technology. So I would talk about having experienced the changes and the evolution and disruption in a variety of industries. Motorola was the number one pager company at one point, for the people in your audience that might remember pagers. You don't see many of them around anymore, but at one point it was a big deal. Then they gave way to car phones and bag phones, which gave way to handheld portable phones, and it shifted from the candy bar phone to the flip phone and then to the smartphone. So I've watched the evolution of an industry, and at one point it was a lot of Nokia and BlackBerry and Motorola and Sony maybe, and now, you know, it's largely Chinese manufacturers, Apple and Samsung. So I've watched major changes take place in an industry, and I think understanding evolution helps us to make better decisions in venture capital, because we're constantly looking at what could potentially disrupt what we do today and where the market is going. We look for change, and in this industry, in venture capital, you have to be looking for change. So we're watching change happen right now. I mean, it's kind of interesting. We're seeing a lot more automation and artificial intelligence make its way into the logistics industry. And so, you know, things are getting smarter, faster, better, cheaper in most cases. And that's being driven by a lot of automation and artificial intelligence.
It is. So that's also one of your investment areas that, I would like to cover a lot more of it later. But let's start maybe from the beginning. What is Zebra Ventures, and what is really the goal of this part of Zebra Technologies?
So Zebra Ventures is the corporate venture capital arm of Zebra Technologies. And Zebra Technologies is the leader in automatic identification and data capture solutions. So Zebra is a market leader and number one in ruggedized mobile computers, data capture solutions, barcode printers, and mobile RFID readers that our customers use across the supply chain. And Zebra serves about 80% of the Fortune 500, including customers such as Ford, John Deere, Amazon, FedEx, DHL, Walmart, and Target. And more recently, in 2021, Zebra became a provider of robotics, machine vision solutions, and retail software products. So that's kind of just a snapshot of our parent company. And as we said, Zebra Ventures is a strategic investor first that also focuses on achieving a financial ROI on our venture investments second. And so we currently have 17 investments in the portfolio, 15 based in the United States, and then 2 based in England. And as you alluded to earlier, Margarita, our core investment themes are what we like to call the 3 A's: automation, artificial intelligence, and analytics across the supply chain. So if you think about disruptive technologies that companies across industries can use to improve the productivity of their operations, it's kind of where we try to focus. And we've invested in Series A through E, but our sweet spot is really Series B and 3 to 5 million in that kind of stage of a company. Just as the startup is gaining customer traction and starting to have more customer proof points and ROI kind of metrics, and they're able to really quantify that and communicate that, is where we really look to invest.
I see. And well, in general, do you know how Zebra Ventures started? It sounds like it has been around for a long time, but maybe like the vision has changed since it started from the very beginning till what it is today with the three A's.
Yeah, it's certainly evolved. I'll take that one. I've been here 9 years. Prior to my arrival, they were investing in technologies that were really related to the printing business because they make barcode printers. And so one of the things they invested in was a company named Display Data that makes electronic shelf labels, which are the digital version of labels that we sell and make. So if you think of that, you go, okay, what is the next thing? We're constantly looking at what's the next thing in our industry. And as Justin said, we're serving the Fortune 500, let's say. And so if you think of anything that would be of interest to trucking companies, to manufacturers, to retail customers, those things in general would be of interest to us because we're involved in all these different pieces of the supply chain in identifying what something is and helping improve the productivity and efficiency of those workflows. So if you think of a package being delivered, let's say from, you know, Amazon or DHL or FedEx or UPS, you have to put every package gets a label put on it. We make printers that make those labels that go on boxes. Those boxes go into cases, which go on to pallets, which go on to trailers. Throughout that whole supply chain, whether it's going on the truck or coming off the truck or going in the box or coming out of the box, it needs to get scanned and identified. We make those scanners. And then finally, when it gets delivered to its end destination, whether that's a retailer or an end customer at their house, it gets scanned again and usually time stamped and date stamped, location stamped. And that's done by a mobile computer with a scan engine on it. And Zebra's number one in that category too. So if we look at this whole commerce and how it's done and how it's shifted, especially during COVID to some degree, from brick and mortar to e-commerce, we're involved in all aspects of it. So we're trying to understand the ebbs and flows of the market and make sure that we have technologies that improve the productivity and efficiency of those material flows. Does that help?
Yeah, it does. I think it's very interesting. And I mean, you have the advantage that you started from a technology that is ubiquitous in the warehouse. So maybe wasn't it a challenge to narrow down to what was really like the most valuable to invest in at first?
Well, think if you think about how things were done maybe, you know, 20 years ago, in a lot of cases, it was paper and pencil still.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
And people writing down things and stuff. Well, and it starts transitioning to barcodes and how can I scan something quickly and identify it, as Justin said, how can I identify that thing better, faster, and cheaper than a visual look and writing it down on a piece of paper? And what keeps getting better is the ability to see those barcodes at further distances, at angles, and that kind of thing. And that's even evolving now to RFID is a technology that Zebra's heavily involved in, and we're looking at investments in that space. And the next iteration of that might be computer vision, where you can have cameras that not only can identify something looking at the barcode, but can determine the status of that thing and whether the box is damaged or the bananas are brown, green, or yellow, or read a freshness date on something. So we're looking at the identification technology evolving from people doing visual checks to barcode scanners to RFID to computer vision and machine vision.
I see. And I mean, looking at your portfolio now, like you also go into areas like AMRs, robotic piece picking, forklifts. So how does that fit into the picture?
So I'll start with that. And then Justin, if you can add some color to it. We observed this, gosh, when I first joined Zebra, I had looked at some robot companies when I was back at Motorola, and we thought that there was going to be an opportunity for processes, I guess, whether they're production processes or processes in distribution centers, to leverage automation for the mundane, repetitive tasks and even some of the dangerous tasks. So we started investing in that area and in a variety of robot companies, because there's so many different problems to be solved or tasks to be done that can be done with automation. So we invested in a few companies, a couple of picking companies, and that would be Plus One Robotics and Right Hand Robotics. We invested in a couple of AMR companies, Fetch Robotics and Locus Robotics. And then we invested actually in a couple of autonomous fork truck companies, Fox Robotics and Third Wave Automation. And quite frankly, all those different solutions are pieces of this broader autonomous or automation solution suite that customers are looking for to solve the different workflow obstacles that they have. And it actually got a lot more interesting during COVID when they couldn't find workers. And so when you don't have workers to do the tasks, how do you fill that gap? And a lot of companies started investing in automation and deploying robots in their facilities to kind of augment the human labor and the human workforce that they have. So we see that continuing, by the way, as robots in some cases can do things faster, better, and cheaper than humans and more accurately. So we're seeing this continued evolution towards automation, and people are taking, I guess, are moving into other higher value add jobs than the repetitive, you know, mundane job that they had before. How can we let a robot do that and the person can do something more important?
I see. And it totally makes sense to have like that wide spectrum of autonomous solutions to, you know, get rid of those like boring tasks that, you know, we hope that humans won't need to do anymore in the future. But maybe it could be interesting, like, to if you walk us through maybe like the typical journey of a startup that starts a journey with you, and how it is in the kind of more in the selection process, I would say, up to maybe like how Zebra goes about upselling the technology or the product to the like Fortune 500 customers that Zebra has in the ACES portfolio.
Yeah, great question. Well, it kind of starts with us understanding what customers want, okay, and what problems they're solving, trying to solve for, and what pain points they have. So Justin and I present to a large Zebra customer pretty much every week. So we have, I'd say, tremendous interaction with customers and our sales organization, as well as our product organization. So it starts by listening to the market and understanding what they need, okay? And then it continues on as we interface with, you know, literally thousands of startups and look at business plans and try to understand what problems those companies, those startups are solving. And some have very broad mandates. Some are very specific. If I think of automation, some are picking little things. Some are picking and moving around big things. So there's, you know, big bots, small bots. There's picking bots. There's big material movement bots. There's a whole host of different types of solutions. One of the fork truck companies we invested in is focused on pallet extraction from a trailer. And another one is focused on what we call high bay put away. So putting that pallet on maybe a 30 foot shelf. And there's other bot companies that are just moving things from point A to point B on one level within a warehouse. So we're trying to understand that broader ecosystem, and the process starts with understanding what problem they solve. But I'll hand it over to Justin and he can talk a little bit more about how we start going through due diligence and interviewing people and understanding a little bit more about the company and their technology.
Yeah, I mean, as part of due diligence, you know, we look at their financial model, right? And as in terms of, to see their current deployments growing in the next few years, right? And then we dig into further into, you know, who are their existing customers? Well, I guess, firstly, what targeted applications are they going after, right? What specific industries? And then who are they serving already in those segments? And then how do they see growing? For example, I mean, if it's like a cold logistics company that has to deal with like pharmaceutical products, right, that need to stay cold, right, they may need to use in warehouses, which have certain requirements of being like down to like negative maybe 30 degrees or some Fahrenheit, for example, right? And there's certain limitations with those warehouses, and that many AMRs have sensors that will fog up and cameras that will fog up in those warehouses, right? So I guess it's understanding, it goes into understanding what applications and customer base these robot companies are going after, and can their technology actually like work in those environments, right? And then as part of our due diligence process too, we'll speak to a few customers to understand, you know, why they chose their robotic vendor, right? Why they choose them versus their competition? What like technical attributes do they have versus their competition that made them go with them and made them stand out? As well as we'll speak to their current investors as well, right? And their board of directors, a few members from their board to understand, you know, what they think the company is doing well, what they could work on, et cetera, and think about what we as strategic investors can bring to the table.
We spend a lot of time trying to understand their strategy and their product roadmap. And I'd add in investigating, if I drill down a little bit on looking at the financials, it's interesting in the robotics industry, you know, there's elements of their revenue that are hardware, there's some that are software, there's some that are services. And understanding how much of each of those things the company's revenue is made up of and what the margins are on those things matters a lot. Because a lot of robot companies, it's hard to differentiate the hardware alone. So the software really makes a difference. That's a little bit harder to evaluate. But we're trying to understand that. And I would also suggest that a lot of their ability to integrate with other players in a larger system matters a lot. Their detailed knowledge of the technology and application that Justin was referring to. There's some stuff that works great in the lab, or it sounds great from an academic perspective. Making it work in the real world is harder. And so we look for a company that has knowledge, you know, that real world kind of practical knowledge that understands what a warehouse looks like. And as Justin alluded to, is it a chilled warehouse, a frozen warehouse, or ambient temperature? All that stuff kind of matters. And we ask those questions as we go through our due diligence process.
Yeah, so no science projects, only real products. Yeah, no, but you touched a very, a good point. So I was actually at Modex last year, and I remember it was an overwhelming amount of software companies, for instance. And one specific thought that I had is how do people evaluate all these companies? Like, how do customers understand what to go for? So, but yeah, in this context, at least, how do you go about evaluating software, even if, of course, it's very difficult?
Well, a lot of it is talking to those customers. And another thing that Justin alluded to is understanding the target. So understanding how big the total available market or the TAM is matters. There's companies that say, oh, there's, you know, whatever, hundreds of thousands of warehouses that our technology would work in. And that could be true, but you go, which ones can afford it? And if you take out the chilled or frozen, because they only work in ambient temperatures, you start limiting that TAM. So understanding the market size really matters. And we spend a lot of time asking questions to get to the kind of to the truth and understand the core around that. And it's not always obvious from looking at their website or even from a couple of, you know, basic introduction materials. You got to ask a lot of questions. That's why we try to spend a lot of time with customers and talking to them and how they're making their decisions, which helps us to make more educated decisions on the companies that we interface with.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think experience is really what in the end counts in these situations, especially when, talking about companies in their Series B, so they do have hopefully some proof in the market. I was wondering, so we talked a little bit also offline, outside of the episode, and you always refer to Zebra Technologies as they. So I'm actually a little bit curious to hear about how you think about like the cooperation with Zebra Technologies between Zebra Ventures and Zebra Technologies, and maybe how a handover of an investment or a collaboration happens. How do you do that?
So we report up through the chief strategy officer, and he's also head of corp dev. So, and he reports to the CEO. So we have we know what's going on from an M&A perspective inside of Zebra. We have a great handle on what the strategy is for Zebra. And then I'd say we work pretty hand in hand, and I mean pretty much every day, with the sales and the product organization. So if we're not ultimately doing a better job of bringing innovation into Zebra, we're missing the point. But to that end, I would say when I joined Zebra, we went from a printer, scanner, and ruggedized mobile computer company. And a few years ago, we launched three new businesses inside of Zebra. We launched a software business, a machine vision business, and an automation business. And I would say all three of those businesses were things that Zebra Ventures was investing in and exploring prior to us launching those businesses. Because as we look at where the market's going, and I think about the three A's and machine vision being part of computer vision and computer vision being part of artificial intelligence, I look at analytics, artificial intelligence, and automation as being critical themes that Zebra needs to be able to offer to our customers and our partners going forward. So all the stuff we invest in is related to where Zebra is headed, let's say. And we actually acquired a couple of our portfolio companies along the way. So we're trying to find stuff that, you know, could potentially be an M&A opportunity, but certainly is something that helps solve problems for our customers and aligns well with Zebra's core businesses. So there's tremendous linkage, and we're trying to find kind of what's new and what's potentially disruptive and bring that innovation into Zebra so we can offer it to our customers.
One thing to piggyback off that we didn't bring up. So as part of our investments, we require board observer seats. And so we sit on the board of these companies and we begin learning about the industries that they're in. So for example, we made the investment in 2019, began learning about when Zebra was not in warehouse robotics at all, right? So we sat on the board, began learning about the warehouse automation market landscape, the different subsegments, right? Material movement, versus picking, and then you can go down further from there, or automated storage and retrieval systems, which I know you're very familiar with, the different competitors in these markets, the growth and potential, right? Starting to see the customer traction, et cetera, as well as most importantly, the relevance to our customers, to Zebra's customers. And so after Zebra started learning about that, we started bringing some knowledge into the parent corporation. Zebra decided to launch our own warehouse automation business in 2021 and ultimately acquired Fetch Robotics, you know, one of our portfolio companies, to move into the automated material movement space. And so just a great example of how investing in companies that are disruptive to Zebra's products can ultimately result in Zebra learning about a new space and deciding to launch a new business and also move into that space through an acquisition as well.
Yeah, I think like that's, to me, that's one of the few examples that I've heard of what is a successful like corporate venture strategy. I mean, from the outside, at least, it sounds like that's what you want to do. You want to invest in something that would be disruptive. And as soon as you understand that, the company is going to be a success, then you take ownership. But usually, like I say, that it's a rare case, because in general, I also heard that making successful corporate venture capital might be not that easy. Like in general, VCs always like have not always, but they invest on a lot of companies. Like they have very massive portfolios, and then it's a numbers game. Like there is going to be that one company that is going to make up for all the losses in investments from like all the other companies in the portfolio. So how do you increase the chances to form a successful corporate venture strategy for, you know, a company like a corporate?
That is a great question. And I think Justin can add to this, but I'll take a stab at it. I got to learn from some fantastic people at Motorola at the time on how to do this well and how to get strategic value as well as financial value. And I would say that a great corporate VC has an advantage over some financial VCs in some ways, in that maybe we can't fish in as large a pond and we're not just making investments typically for financial reasons, but we have the ability, because we have built-in knowledge in the company, to understand, you know, do a little bit deeper due diligence on technology, understand markets, workflows, ecosystems, competitive environments, because we're in the business. And we have, you know, like I said, we present to about a customer every week. So we're getting insights from those customers, from their innovation teams in some cases. So we have a pretty good understanding of the markets that we serve. And I think to some degree that gives us a bit of an advantage. And in some cases, Zebra is able to leverage what our investors or our investments do. And let's say they make software that works with our hardware. So in some cases, we can help be the sales channel and drive customers and revenue to these startups. So I think we can have an impact on the outcome of our investments. And I think we've seen that. And I would suggest that we've been pretty successful, both strategically and financially. And I think they're actually related.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it is a pretty interesting journey here. But also, I was thinking about that. How do you handle more like the relationship with the existing VC investors in target companies? So I heard that usually actually VCs are not all super enthusiastic of having strategic investors on the board because, yeah, there is at some point, maybe like it can limit their upside at some point. So how do you go about that?
That's a great question. I would say we're not heavy-handed in the terms that we seek, and we traditionally co-invest on the back of a financial VC term sheet. So one thing is not being heavy-handed and looking for certain rights that would hurt, you know, potentially hurt an outcome for a startup. But the second thing is proving value. So we've co-invested with a bunch of other strategics and obviously with a ton of other financial VCs. And I think what we try to do is show them value. So part of that value is, for instance, we've got a presentation coming up on Wednesday to a major automobile manufacturer, and we're going to be able to represent a couple of our startups in that meeting with that customer and get them visibility with this customer. And we're also talking about a couple of the companies that are on our radar. So we can provide value and hopefully, like I said, customers and revenue to our portfolio companies. And the other investors, the financial investors, of course, love to see that. And as long as we're not too heavy-handed on terms and looking for some specific unique rights that could limit the exit, I think the financial investors like to have us around because we have some subject matter expertise. The other piece of it is not only on the go-to-market sales and marketing side, but in some cases, our product engineers can work in concert and collaborate with some of these portfolio companies and their technologies. And so there could be alignments both on the product side and the sales side. So I think we could provide more value to some portfolio companies, and we have to, you know, be intelligent about that so we can find the win-win. But I think if we approach things like that, I think we provide value as an investor, you know, to the startup and to our co-investors in the deal.
So what you bring basically as a strategic investor are two things, the access basically to great customers and also to some extent some R&D collaboration.
We get out in the three kind of key things that we add or value we add to our companies. One, provide insights. So we provide them insights because we're on the boards of other companies as well as leveraging Zebra's market knowledge because we're a leader in a lot of our products and our segments, right? So as well as Tony and I constantly have discussions with other investors, entrepreneurs, and then like you said, we participate in customer discussions. So I'd say providing insights to our portfolio companies. Two would be kind of the business development function where we work to promote companies both inside and outside of Zebra. Like Tony said, we present to a lot of our customers. We educate our sales team as well as we're close to a lot of our partners, our channel partners that Zebra currently has about 10,000 distribution channel partners, right? So big reach globally. And then we also help our companies get into Zebra booths such as at NRF, Modex, ProMat, Logimat, et cetera, right? And then the third I'd say is the product co-development opportunities. So we help our companies navigate Zebra, make the appropriate introductions to the right people in the BU business unit, and then, you know, try to find collaborative ways to work together from a commercial perspective. So one example, like we had a previous like combined like solution that we exhibited at a conference between one of our picking companies and our Fetch AMR, right? Like the roller top. So just showing an example of how, right, we can, Zebra's existing products or BU can work with some of our companies that we've invested in.
Okay. And I actually had a follow-up question because, I mean, like you have this huge network of like, or Zebra has a huge network of distributors, but like, so they, do you ever run into conflicts on maybe like the type of technology and maybe, Zebra partners have similar technology and push that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've got to be careful and sensitive to the other people that we're already working with. And we don't want to, you know, create a difficult competitive environment for existing partners. I would say, though, in general, we're pretty much in tune. We present to our partners, our big distribution partners, on a pretty regular basis, too, and understand what they're looking for and how they're trying to better serve their customers. And quite frankly, a lot of the partners that we have are looking to work with some of the companies that Zebra invested in, because it's often a gap in what they're able to offer their customers. So what we're consistently trying to find that win-win. And because we have good collaborative partners, you know, channel partners that we work with, I think they've helped educate us on what they're looking for. And I think we've made some great introductions to them, not only to companies that we invested in, but in some cases, we find that it's not the right investment for Zebra, but it could be a good partner. And so in some cases, even when we don't invest, we find a win, you know, that we set up some type of commercial agreement, or we connect them with a partner and they set up a commercial agreement with one of our partners. So, you know, once in a while we run into some conflict, but I'd say that's the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, and I think like as long as one is able to navigate in this situation with the right approach, everything can be overcome this way. So it sounds to me like also in your roles, you're quite involved into the commercial of like almost the sales part of Zebra. So like it's just that maybe you sell kind of a different product to customers, to distributors, but in a sense, maybe does it feel a little bit like that you're a salesperson for your startups?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, so we're presenting this Wednesday, you know, in a couple of days, and the interesting thing there is the sales organization wants us to present, and the reason being is that their customers want to see what's new. They want to understand what's next, what's disruptive, where the market's going, where the money's flowing, and trying to understand how they can solve some of their problems. Maybe it's, you know, they're struggling to retain employees, and so they have a labor shortage. It could be improving product quality. The things we're looking at help solve those problems. So our salespeople like to include us in these meetings because it helps present Zebra's full suite of solutions and helps them understand that we're a trusted solution provider that goes above and beyond, you know, our traditional hardware product orientation. And that Zebra, with our partners and our investments, our portfolio companies, their software on our hardware, for instance, provides a better and stickier solution that solves more problems. So we're trying to help, you know, we're ultimately out there to serve our customers and make them better for their customers. And we can do that with partners. We can't, you know, create everything ourselves. And so finding the right partners and sometimes, you know, helping them through investing in them makes them stronger and makes us stronger too.
That's very powerful, I think. I wanted also to cover a little bit your, the investment areas. So the three A's. So like it's analytics, AI, and?
And automation.
And automation. Yeah, that's true. So maybe, okay, we mentioned it at the beginning, AI. So, I mean, if I can get maybe an opinion on AI-driven use cases in logistics and what you think maybe are use cases that are a little bit overhyped.
I think I would say the humanoid space currently seems a little overhyped. I mean, at least in my opinion. I mean, I'm sure you saw figures whopping $675 million round. I think it was announced probably a month ago. The post-money valuation was $2.7 billion. And the round did include a lot of big names, big AI investors such as Amazon, NVIDIA, Microsoft, OpenAI, et cetera. But And we do believe that Brad Adcock, the CEO, is extremely impressive, but I think that technology has a long way to go. I mean, giving a pre-revenue company this massive valuation reminds me of the valuations in 2021. And Tony and I have talked about the humanoid space, and we look at it as kind of like a Swiss Army knife in that they are okay, or they will be okay, at a lot of different applications, but they're not really great at anything specific, right? I don't think there's any applications in which humanoids perform tasks better, faster, and cheaper than humans or other automation solutions today. And I think it's going to take a lot of time and money for this to happen, if ever. So that's one space I think is pretty hyped right now.
Yeah, but they did just get a lot of money, so yeah, which will give them some time. And I think the stuff that we see coming out from all that, all the dollars being spent on intelligent engineers will, you know, force everybody to get better at their game, all the other automation solutions that are out there. But that one seems like, yeah, it's high in the hype cycle right now. As far as AI, so if you break AI down into, I guess I like to break it into three major segments: computer vision, machine learning, and natural language processing. I would say things that we used to think were novel and innovative are becoming more mainstream. I mean, we use Siri and Alexa to interface with databases all the time. We're getting information, whether it's on weather or traffic, on a regular basis. The predictions are getting better. How all this gets applied to our industry, think of in logistics, well, we want to know where things are. We want to know when things are going to arrive. We want to schedule labor better. So getting that information that's more accurate, more timely, and more actionable is all benefiting from some of the improvements in machine learning. I would add that, like computer vision, we're seeing some great use cases for computer vision in the retail space for frictionless checkout and for inventory visibility. So we're seeing different applications of the different subsets of AI in all our verticals. And I think we'll continue to see that get better as AI, as both the cameras get better, so the hardware gets a little bit better, the processing power gets better, the data sets get better and cleaner, so you can get better, extract better information, get better insights from them. And all that leads to better tasks and clearer tasks, more timely tasks to save time, to save money, to save labor. So I think we're going to see that, and it's just all getting better kind of in lockstep. So it isn't just AI, it's AI in concert with analytics, in concert with automation, are going to make businesses more efficient. I think what we'll see is the companies that don't start getting their toe in the water on these things are going to fall behind.
Yeah, yeah. I think like in a lot of areas now in our industry, it is about the software. And then, yeah, this is, of course, like all of these are examples on how a company can build a differentiated advantage. And we like you gave a few interesting use cases, but I also wanted to ask about maybe some use cases that you think are either underrated or that maybe you would have liked to see more startup activity in than is actually happening. Is there anything like that?
Well, I think we're seeing stuff go from AI concepts to AI in reality. And, you know, examples I would use is, we saw drones. Gosh, I saw drones 9 years ago. But now I'm starting to see more practical application of drones and more practical applications of robotics and better leveraging of computer vision as the cameras get better, the links, the wireless communication systems that they're attached to get better, and the processing in the cloud or processing on the edge for that matter. All that stuff is getting better, and things that were great ideas, cool ideas like 10 years ago and then started getting better technology 5 years ago, now we're seeing them be deployed. And examples would be inventory visibility, whether it's in retail or in a warehouse. In order to know how to schedule your labor and to respond to customer requests for products, you need to know where your inventory is. Typical companies 5 years ago had inventory accuracy rates in the 60s. Now we're seeing with computer vision and the data being shared properly, and AI being and machine learning being leveraged, we're starting to see inventory accuracy rates in the 90s for some companies that are adopting it. So using these things for inventory visibility, better distributed order management, better demand planning using machine learning, all these things are starting to happen. And they're being done in concert with people, but it starts with having better data, and some of that data is collected through the means of AI.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, related to data, analytics is like tightly linked with this. So, and I also heard that this year at MODEX, data in general, like was a huge topic. I mean, it is every year, of course, but well, in general, what trends are you looking at in this area, since it's one of your investment focuses?
So on the analytics side, you know, it's looking, it's tied into the other two. So I don't want to talk about one without the other. But if I'm looking at the data and the data is clean, I can start figuring out which of the carriers maybe is most efficient and which of them has the best on-time delivery and how I can start saving money or increasing my on-time deliveries by using the right people, by packaging things or combining them correctly. And so it starts with knowing that information and then analyzing it. So I think that's happening a lot more now than it was in the past. Understanding traffic patterns, understanding what to do when, for instance, when the Suez Canal was blocked, okay? Or when, gosh, it was a few years ago, but during COVID, when they didn't have the labor to unload the ships at the Port of LA or Port of Long Beach out in California, you know, what do you do then? How do you decide what you should unload? And, you know, ideally you're unloading the perishables so they don't spoil when they're sitting on a freighter, but there's all that information. So knowing where things are, adding some real-time information to it, like that it's perishable and that the temperatures are whatever they are that are gonna cause them to perish faster. How do I take that information and figure out the best use of my labor and the workflow that I should use to get these things, you know, unload those trailers and get those things, you know, off the trailer and into a store. So, you know, for human consumption, let's say if it's food. So all that data and analyzing that correctly, that's where things are going. And it's already started, but I think it's going to get better going forward as we see better AI models.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very inspiring to hear like so many good examples and how analytics can improve different parts of the logistics process and the supply chain. And also looking a little bit wider, I think like there are, now it's bursting with companies that promote supply chain visibility and also traceability, transparency, and so on. I come from the warehousing space, so still learning about this, but I think there is a lot of potential in this area.
I would bring up one of my portfolio companies is Locus Robotics. And they were born out of a Quiet Logistics, which was a 3PL. So they understood the problem quite well. They built the robot specifically to solve that each picking problem. But I would call that company more of a software and data company than a hardware robot company. And they're figuring out the swarming algorithms. How do they travel the least amount that they have to do? How do they, which people are doing the most picks? How should they put the right stuff in the right place in their facilities to shorten the distance that a person has to walk or a robot has to travel to pick an item? So all that stuff, all that data that they're collecting in the process of the robot doing the each pick and moving from point A to point B, they're leveraging that information and those insights to make those facilities more productive. And maybe some of that information was available before, but now they're getting it on a faster basis, and I think analyzing it better than they ever have before.
Yeah, that's a good topic, because that was like kind of my next question, more about this flood of AMR companies that we see in the automation space. So, and I was wondering exactly like how you think these companies will distinguish themselves like from all of these competitors that are popping up. So, is this the answer? Is better route planning what that dictates what a better AMR company is?
Well, I'd say that the swarming algorithm matters, so better route planning matters, but a very intuitive user interface, easy to train on, easy to get your new employees up to speed quickly. I would say their integration capability into a broader warehouse distribution automation solution. So where does it fit? What WMS does it have to talk to? I think all that stuff matters. And really knowing the not just the routes, but you know the distance, the width of the aisles, where the items are, all that stuff matters. And so to me, Marguerite, it's more the software piece and their services component, their customer success component, than just the hardware piece. Because I think a lot of people are going to be able to make the hardware. It's going to be, you know, that do they understand the problem they're solving? Did they walk away from deals that weren't a good fit for their thing? Or do they try to shoehorn their solution in? So, you know, companies that I think are going to stay around for a long time are the ones that truly understand those customer problems and have the flexibility and scalability to work with those people, but walk away from the ones that they're not, you know, well suited for.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the other thing to add to Tony's point is the partnerships between robot OEMs and systems integrators. Seems like they're starting to formalize. And so that's enabling companies to start building out another, like some competitive advantage as well. So I think partnerships are pretty crucial in addition to Tony's points.
Yeah, Locus AMRs were everywhere, are always everywhere at the trade shows. But is this about basically pitching a solution together with another OEM or a system integrator? Is that like the partnership where you're talking about?
Systems integrators have a lot, in many cases, just almost like with Zebra, right? We have 10,000 channel partners, right? So they have a huge reach to bring our product through, right, to the end customer. Same here, where that systems integrators have a larger reach than a lot of the direct sales team for these robotic companies, right? And so the robotic companies want to get a good relationship with systems integrators that are known, right, and that can bring their product in to the end consumer. So, and a lot of times these systems integrators do bake-offs of different robotics companies and against each other, right? And so, like you said, Locus was across MODEX, right? I'm sure at Logimet. So they clearly proved themselves, proved their solution works, proved that their messaging to the end consumer is easy to understand, right? And their software is strong. So I think just having the technical capabilities, the ability to communicate the product you're solving or problem you're solving, and then just having strong relationships with strong systems integrators is going to be key, I think, going forward.
Yeah, great point. The only thing I would add to that is the right business model. So at the beginning of the automation journey, I think most companies were CapEx, and now a lot of them are looking at, you know, robots as a service or OpEx business models. And some are looking at, you know, piece picking, number of things that you picked as the business model. So I think business models are evolving as customers are becoming more creative and the suppliers are becoming more creative in solving their problems. But I think it starts with understanding that customer problem. And a lot of integrators that have been selling to some of these customers for, you know, 20, 30 years have, you know, deep roots in that facility, know what the problems are. And as Justin said, they bake off a few of the robot companies against each other and they know what the right one is for that use case. So finding the right technology, but also finding the right business model matters.
Understood. So I had one last question. So since, you have your portfolio companies and so on, you have 17 of them, so that's a lot. But what would you recommend to someone that is about to submit their pitch deck to Zebra Ventures?
Well, first, check out our website, because we have a website where you could submit a pitch deck. Number two, know the problem you're solving. And talk about solving customer problems more than just talking about technology. Understand the size of that market, the TAM, the total available market or the served available market. understand your competitors better than we do, let's say. A lot of companies come and they know a lot about them, you know, their technology, but they haven't really researched the market, so they don't know the other players, and I think that's a mistake. So knowing the other players in the market, and then ideally going, we understand customers really well. We know the specific segment we're going to go after. We understand who the other players are here, and here's how we are different and better. So it's not so much about technology. Of course, technology matters, but it's much more, here's the problem we solve and why we do it better, faster, and cheaper than anybody else.
Yeah, and in addition to that, so if they're submitting the pitch deck to Zebra Ventures, I'd say, you know, hopefully they have some type of view or thought through ahead of time on like, okay, what strategic intersections or overlap are there between their product and Zebra Technologies, right? Because, you know, as we've talked about, we're strategic investors, so we really need that lens. And I don't think we brought up, we require an executive level business unit sponsor from one of Zebra's business units. So there has to be some type of way we can work together going forward. So if they have some type of view and put thought into that ahead of time, you know, that would be awesome.
Okay, that's a great input. And when we come to the end, I'm out of questions, but I really thank you for the super insightful discussion today. Thank you both.
Thank you a lot, Margarita.
Yeah, thanks for having us.